Well, it's great to be here. Nice to see many of you again that I've met before. Nice to meet a lot of you for the first time. I'm going to try to give an overview of restorative reproductive medicine and the specific brand of it, if you will, of NAMPR technology. These are my points that I will be covering and emphasizing this talk. First, infertility should be considered what it really is, a chronic health condition, not an acute health condition. Restorative reproductive medicine is an approach that seeks to diagnose the underlying conditions, what those conditions are that contribute to that chronic condition. The Creighton Model Fertility Care Chart, as we've heard from just now, is a valuable health indicator for prevention and treatment. And we've heard about, I'll just briefly tie into what Jacqueline has already said about that. And NAMPR technology has the healthiest outcomes for mothers and babies, and it's the key, we believe, to current treatment and future research that we're doing, and we'll talk a little bit about some of that research we're doing in the IRRM, IIRRM. Okay, what is restorative reproductive medicine? Well, here's a definition from our website. Medical evaluation, techniques, and interventions that seek to cooperate with or restore the normal physiology and anatomy of the human reproductive system. So the key words here are cooperate and restore. By that definition, it does not employ methods that are inherently suppressive, circumventive, or destructive. And it's in that approach we support the patient's right to understand and cooperatively manage their own fertility with appropriate medical assistance. So it's a partnership between the couple and the doctor and the rest of the healthcare team, including the fertility care practitioner. We've already heard about Creighton Model Fertility Care Charting. It's a highly standardized system for fertility tracking with the vaginal discharge recording system, standardized observation protocol, and standardized teaching system with the follow-up form. And it's teaching that's tailored to a woman's individual situation. So there's different sections of that follow-up form, whether a woman is coming off the pill, she's breastfeeding, she's trying to get pregnant, she's has irregular bleeding. All of those different situations have different sets of standardized questions in the follow-up form to facilitate that teaching. We've already seen this chart. This is the version we want to see. We've already seen this chart that just shows the women's charting on the top two lines, and then in this particular chart, the hormonal correlation of the estrogen rise and the progesterone rise after ovulation. When I show this slide to medical students, I say, notice a perfectly normal 29-day cycle with ovulation about day 19, not day 14, and perfectly within the normal range. All right, and with this Creighton model charting, we can look at the biomarkers of vaginal bleeding and cervical fluid. With that, we can identify the estimated day of ovulation with high precision, the fertile days, and have a lot of clues for gynecologic and reproductive function. So natural procreative technology, or NAPRO technology, as we've already heard, is based on the Creighton model fertility care charting as a standardized approach to develop medical protocols to support and restore normal reproductive function, whether that's for the purpose of getting pregnant or for the purpose of managing gynecologic conditions. It has medical and surgical components, and it empowers the woman or couple to be an equal partner with the physician and the rest of the healthcare team. It's a scientifically developed system. It's not the only way of doing restorative reproductive medicine, but we'd argue it's the most developed and best way we have. And we are currently doing practice-based research that I'll talk a little bit more about, including the INS study. We'll have a little bit more about that later. So now let's talk about infertility as a chronic health condition. Just a little bit of review. I think everybody knows this, but what is acute and what is chronic? Acute conditions have sudden onset. They're usually short duration. They tend to have single or few causes. They may be cured by a single intervention, and they may resolve spontaneously. Chronic conditions have gradual onset, usually. They have longer duration. They usually have multiple causes, not just one cause. Their outcomes can be improved with multiple sustained interventions, but they rarely resolve spontaneously, and it's rarely just one thing you do to cure them. So just some examples. Acute conditions, appendicitis, need a surgery. Respiratory viral infection, need to wait it out, it goes away. Fractured bone, needs to be set, it heals. Chronic conditions, we know. Asthma does not go away, rarely. It has to be managed, has to be kept under control. Diabetes rarely goes away, just be managed and kept healthy over time. Degenerative arthritis rarely goes away, has to be managed over time. Infertility is a chronic condition, not an acute condition, and that really should drive the way we think about it. Now, patients come to us as providers, as physicians, and maybe fertility care practitioner, and they think of it as an acute condition. I want to get pregnant yesterday. This is an emergency. I need to be pregnant as soon as possible, and that's the only thing on their minds. And that's understandable. We need to respect their feelings and deal with that. But from a medical point of view, it's not an acute condition. It developed gradually in most cases. We don't know exactly when it started. There are ongoing issues. There are usually multiple issues. There's a potential for recurrence, often with future pregnancies. It may or may not recur in terms of trying to get pregnant. It's a syndrome, of course, not a diagnosis. There are multiple underlying causes, and there are many possible causes. It's rarely cured by a single intervention. The key word here being single. There are multiple things that need to be done, usually, to address it. And spontaneous or treatment pregnancy may occur without altering the underlying conditions. In other words, you can, through whatever treatment or sometimes spontaneously, have a pregnancy, but the underlying conditions that made it more difficult to get pregnant and impact the health of the mother and potentially the baby are still there if they aren't addressed. It's a couple syndrome, and we usually think about it, again, when the couple comes in with infertility, they think about it, I can't get pregnant, I want to get pregnant. That is all they're thinking about. And again, we need to respect that, respect their concerns. But from a medical point of view, it's not just about inability to get pregnant. It's about the health of the baby once the baby's conceived. It's about the health of the mother during the pregnancy. It's about the long-term health of the mother. It's about the long-term health of the father. We have less research on that, but there is a little bit pointing in that direction. And long-term health of the child. These are all related to the underlying conditions, and it's not just about not being able to get pregnant. So looking at restorative reproductive medicine, we try to diagnose those underlying conditions, and I would be the last person to claim that we have all the answers and we know all the conditions. We do know quite a bit. There's a lot more to learn, I think. But the point is, we want to try to find out everything we can about the underlying condition, not just get them pregnant. So restorative reproductive medicine, I'm going to have a few slides here where I can contrast the restorative reproductive medicine approach, RRM, with the assisted or artificial reproductive technology approach, IVF and so forth, ART. Here we can see one of the differences. Restorative reproductive medicine indicates the presence of disease and the challenge is to diagnose and treat that disease, not just for a pregnancy, but for the optimum health of all persons involved, the mother, the father, and the child. ART considers infertility a technical challenge to bypass, and not trying to diagnose the underlying issues. When we look at appropriate diagnosis, with restorative reproductive medicine approach, we are trying to diagnose all identifiable and potentially treatable underlying causes and try to identify any factors that may not be a direct cause, but they may be exacerbating or mitigating, improving or making worse the condition and address those. Whereas with ART, there's very little concern about diagnosis and contributing factors unless they impact the ability to use IVF. And if they do, then they want to do that. But other than that, they actually talk about, we don't need to diagnose. We just want to treat. Infertility, there are many possible etiologies, of course, of this syndrome. And usually with a NAPRO evaluation, multiple etiologies are present. That's really key. That's a revelation when I talk to patients about that. They've always, before, been told either there's one thing causing this or it's unexplained. And we're looking at trying to find all the possible causes. Now, again, I wouldn't claim that we have all the possible causes. There's still more to find out, but we know at least some of them. This is a... I guess this didn't load. I will have to just... Okay, I apologize. There's a graph here I have that... Is it on the web version? Yeah, so the web people are seeing the graph and you're not. I apologize. Didn't load on the web. Basically, this was a figure showing of 95... from Dr. Boyle's practice, of 95 couples who had gotten pregnant with NAPRO after having not been able to get pregnant with IVF. And we looked at the diagnoses they had prior to getting a NAPRO evaluation and after getting a NAPRO evaluation. Prior to getting a NAPRO evaluation, over half of them had unexplained infertility. And after the evaluation, only, I think, one of them had unexplained infertility. The rest of them all had several diagnoses, including low luteal progesterone, low luteal estrogen, poor cervical fluid, various underlying issues that were identified in the NAPRO evaluation that had not been identified previously. So I apologize for the figure. Well, next point I would like to address is that crate model fertility charting is a valuable health indicator for prevention and treatment. And then we've already heard about this a little bit from Jacqueline, but just to emphasize this point, the vaginal discharge recording system gives you this ability to look at this in a standardized way. How many of you have had a patient or a client tell you that they had a day 21 progesterone level? Okay. Most of us have had that experience. This is just to show, this is just to illustrate what happens if you do a day 21 progesterone level. Here in this cycle, ovulation is about day 29. Due to day 21 progesterone level, it's preovulatory. It means nothing. You want to do the progesterone level on 7 days after the peak day right here, which happens to be day 36 in this cycle. Same thing here, similar, same type of issue here. If you want, you say, okay, well, that's one cycle. But here's a, these figures did not load as, I'm sorry. Okay, so here's another figure that I will just describe it. It gives the length of the follicular phase in a large database of 2,000 cycles from 426 women. And what we see is that about 15-20% of the cycles ovulation is occurring after day 21. This is in a group of normal women with normal fertility, as far as we know, normal cycles, and not even the infertility women. And a good percentage of the cycles, 20% or so, ovulation is occurring after day 21. So a day 21 progesterone level would be meaningless in at least 20% of cycles. And actually, if you expand that, a day 21 progesterone level is also meaningless in the first couple of days after ovulation. It's about 25-30% of cycles. Here are some of the patterns we can see of the crate model charting in infertility. We have not yet done, like with the INES study, we'll be able to do this to describe what percentage of infertility patients have these different patterns. But anecdotally, I can say that probably two-thirds have one of these first three patterns. And then the bleeding is another issue. But just in terms of the mucus pattern, very limited mucus. This is only one day of the cervical mucus. This is a normal duration of the cervical fluid discharge, but you'll have to take my word for it. These descriptions down here indicate a very limited quantity and quality. This, of course, is a completely dry cycle with no cervical fluid seen at all. And I would say, again, about two-thirds probably fall in this category, and it's one of the things with the INES study and others, we'll be able to do some actual descriptives of what percentage of women have which types of cycles with infertility. Then you can also sometimes see a short luteal phase with obviously the potential to not have the opportunity for implantation to occur. And then you can also see what a totally normal cycle, looking cycle. Not, there will not always be abnormalities on the crate model chart, but I would say most of the time. Some of the other abnormalities that can be seen are bleeding abnormalities. You can see brown bleedings or spotting at the end of menstruation. You can see prolonged spotting, and you can also see premenstrual spotting. So some of the markers we look at very carefully when we're evaluating a couple with infertility, but also any other conditions, are the duration of the pre-ovulatory or pre-peak phases, the duration of the post-ovulatory, post-peak phase, the mucous cycle score. This is a standard score based on the vaginal discharge system and a numerical scoring of that. Premenstrual, postmenstrual spotting, and intermenstrual spotting or bleeding. All those things are very significant in the chart evaluation. I want to give you one example. We did a randomized trial of crate model instruction for couples trying to get pregnant. And what we found, this is, can you read? I don't remember the exact numbers here. You read them too. In the control group that did not get crate model instruction, only 4% recorded premenstrual spotting. Is it 12%?
And 8% of cycles.
And 8% of cycles. But in the crate model, in the crate model group, 12% recorded premenstrual spotting. Now, this was a randomized trial, so we'd expect, and their ages were almost identical. Their other characteristics of the women were almost identical. And what this suggests is that with crate model instruction, the women were much more tuned in, three times more likely to notice and record premenstrual spotting. And then when we looked at the rates, conception rates, these are in couples with normal fertility. This study was normal fertility. The conception rates in cycles with premenstrual spotting, just that abnormality by itself, was half of that in the cycles without the premenstrual spotting. So suggesting that premenstrual spotting really is a significant biomarker. And this is just the beginning of a lot more research that needs to be done to quantitate what is the power of these different biomarkers, predictive issues with them for different outcomes, including conception. So conception rates, again, were about half. In couples with apparently normal fertility, as far as we knew, we're about half for cycles where premenstrual spotting was documented with the crate model charting. So Napper technology, I will assert next, has the healthiest outcomes for mothers and babies when it's being used to treat infertility. So again, let's look at the Napper technology versus the ART approach. Napper technology, we are managing a chronic health condition. Doesn't mean we are taking, that we aren't trying to do it as quickly and as expeditiously as possible, but it does mean we are considering this an ongoing issue, not just a pregnancy to happen, but health that needs to be improved. We address all the underlying diseases and factors to the extent that we know how to identify and address them, and we seek to optimize the health of the baby, the mother, and the father. The ART approach is get it done now as fast as possible at almost any cost, both monetarily and health-wise. So when we're looking at the evidence of how these approaches work, we have to evaluate with the appropriate kind of evidence. The chronic approach to evidence, or looking at a chronic condition, is to look at cumulative outcomes over time. We have to say, what is the outcome over a period of time, and look at a whole group of women or couples and look at them over time and get the full picture over the time and follow-up time of what happens to them. The acute approach ignores the time element and just says what's happening this cycle. And it's misleading. Just one example. It has nothing to do with NAPRO, or at least very little. But you think about diet and weight loss. Any of you have looked at this at some of those studies in the literature or some of the claims made in ads that have nothing to do with real studies. But anyway, you look at any data on the outcome of a diet for weight loss or any kind of dietary program, and they say you lost 30 pounds in a month, say, okay, that's great. But what I really want to know is how much have you lost and kept off 6 months from now, a year from now? That's what really matters, not how much you lost in a month. So that's just kind of an example of looking at outcomes over time instead of just like right now. So with infertility, we're talking about in 1 year from now, how many had a baby or are pregnant and had a baby, not how many in this cycle. So we have a problem with this. The national registries for ART in the USA, they're called the SART, Society for Assisted Reproductive Technology. In Europe, it's ESHRE. UK, it's the Human Fertility Embryology Authority. All of these registries have data in terms of treatment cycles. None of them, we don't know how many women there are. We don't know how many cycles per woman. We don't have chronic cohort outcomes. All we have is cycle outcomes, and that's profoundly misleading. Here, the Cochrane Database of Systematic Reviews. And, how many of you are familiar with Cochrane? Just curious. Yeah, okay, most of you. Did an evaluation of IVF, and they said outcomes should be reported as pregnancy rates per woman or couple, not per cycle, per woman or couple, because repeat cycle data are not statistically independent and are less relevant. So this is what they said should be done. It's now, I can count the number of IVF studies that have done this on two hands, very few. Most of them are cycle-based studies, but this is what the Cochrane Database Reviews Group said should be done. And here's an example. This figure at least is displaying, even if it's a little stretched. So this is from a paper we published last year. This is not an actual cohort. This is a simulation based on existing data of pregnancy rates. But it's an example of what we'd be looking at. It illustrates the principle here. If we had IVF done, these are cumulative pregnancy rates. Up here would be 100% pregnant up here. We applied this to a simulated group of infertile couples based on actual pregnancy rates per cycle in the literature. If you just did IVF, within one cycle, IVF pregnancy rates are higher. Three cycles, a little bit higher still. Get out to about 9-10 months, the conservative treatment, which in our case we would argue Napro would be the best approach to that, would actually cross the line, and at a year is actually a little bit ahead of the IVF in terms of pregnancy rates. That's just pregnancy rates. We're not talking about the health of the baby. I'll talk about that in a minute. So the issue is you've got to look at the cumulative pregnancy rate over time and not just look at the first cycle. That makes sense, this figure? This is back to the Cochrane database. The effectiveness of IVF relative to other treatment options for unexplained fertility remains unproven. And then really important, adverse events and the costs associated and have not been adequately assessed. So we need to look at cumulative live birth rates per couple, not per cycle. And we can look at these by adjusted rates or crude rates. Crude rates is a intention to treat everybody who starts. We look at their pregnancy or birth rate, regardless of whether they continue treatment or not. Adjusted rates adjust for those who drop out of treatment, and they're not counted anymore after they drop out. Adjusted rates would be more accurate if the dropouts had nothing to do with prognosis. In other words, dropout was independent of whether they're likely to succeed. That is actually a strong assumption that probably is not always true. So the true rates are probably in between the adjusted and crude rates. I'll just give this as an example just to make you help you think about this. If you had 100 couples that started a treatment and 50 dropped out after 3 months and none of them were pregnant, and then 50 more got, the rest of them all got pregnant after 9 months, your crude live birth rate would be 50%, because 50 had gotten pregnant. I'm sorry, this should be a live birth. Anyway, your crude rate would be 50% because 50 had gotten pregnant and had a birth after 9 months. but your adjusted would be 100% because the 50 that dropped out don't count anymore. And 50 out of 50 got pregnant and had a live birth. So the crude rate is 50%, the adjusted rate is 100%, the true value is somewhere in between. That makes sense? Okay. So with that, we also want to look at the underlying characteristics. We need to account for the population characteristics that impact the prognosis. So I'm going to illustrate this. This is another hypothetical example, just to illustrate this point. We have study A with treatment A, and it has an 80% adjusted live birth rate. 80% of these couples adjusted had a live birth. In that study, the women's average age, this is a hypothetical illustration. In that study, the women's average age was 23. They'd been trying to get pregnant for an average of 1.5 years. And all women had previously had a baby. Study B has a 20% adjusted live birth rate, 1/4 of that of treatment of study A. But in that study, the women's average age is 43. The couple had been trying to get pregnant for an average of 10 years, and none of them had previously had a live birth. So I'd like to see a show of hands. Who thinks treatment A is more impressive, and who thinks treatment B? Treatment A, more impressive. Treatment B, more impressive. So you all said treatment B is more impressive, but it only had a 20% birth rate compared to treatment A had an 80% birth rate. So how could treatment B, well, obviously I'm just making the point that 20% birth rate is actually much more impressive here because of the underlying population, right? So a lot of times people don't pay much attention to this. You have to look very closely. What is the population? What is their average age? How long have they been trying? And some of the IVF studies don't look at this. Some of the IVF studies don't even report the woman's age or how long she's been trying. All right, so let's look at two cohorts. This is one of the cohorts that on the left is the Irish study that came out of Phil's practice that we helped publish in 2008, NAPRO cohort, and on the right is a reasonably somewhat comparable cohort that was published from IVF in the Netherlands. This is as close of a comparison as we have at this point. And you can see there are similar sizes of studies, Irish study over 1,000 and the Netherlands about 1,300. Important to notice that the mean female age here, the woman's age, is 3 years older in the Irish study compared to the Netherlands study. The duration of time trying to get pregnant is 2 years longer in the Irish study compared to the Netherlands study. And 33% of the Irish study women had previously tried IVF not had a pregnancy compared to zero in the Netherlands study. This is all their first IVF. And the prior pregnancy number had previously had some kind of pregnancy was the same in both. We have a two-year follow-up frame on the Irish study for a live birth and a one-year follow-up on the Netherlands study for just pregnancy, not live birth. I'm sorry. So what is not on here, you're going to have to... Okay, here it is. Down here, it's 53% birth rate for the Irish study adjusted, 65% pregnancy rate, not birth rate. So they didn't report the birth rate. We don't know how many miscarriages there were.
25.5
for Ireland. So then the crude rates are 25% here on the Irish and on the Netherlands, 42%. So again, I think as best a comparison could be made, given that we have older women having tried longer here, I think that's a very similar, if not at least similar, if not perhaps better outcome. We don't have a randomized trial here. We have a pretty good comparison, I think. This is an important piece that's not often emphasized. The Irish study twin rate was under 5%. The Netherlands ART 22%, and that's pretty low for IVF studies in the U.S. The twin and multiple rate is 40%. So Europe does a little better with that, but at any rate, still that's a pretty high rate of twins. They did not report the rate of a low birth weight. I assume it would be definitely more than the under 5% we had with the Irish study. So again, infertility is not just about getting pregnant. It's about the health of the baby. And when you have multiple gestation, I mean, everybody's happy to have twins, but it is higher risk. And you do have higher rates of low birth weight and more morbidity. If we're looking at the health of the baby as well as just getting pregnant, NAPRO clearly has superior outcomes here. So looking at the health of the baby, we expect that NAPRO will have lower miscarriage rates than IVF would. We don't have numbers on that yet. That's something we're going to be getting with the INS study to be able to actually look at the miscarriage rates. We actually did have some of that from the Irish study as well. So expect that these miscarriage rates are going to be substantially lower with the way of detention prior to conception as well as supporting the pregnancy. Low birth weight rates are under 5% with NAPRO. With ART in various studies, they're at least 30% or higher. We expect that we'll have, therefore, lower rates of prematurity and perinatal mortality. It takes a lot of numbers to look at perinatal mortality. We don't have the size to do that. But a meta-analysis of ART was published in OBGYN, the American, well, it's called the Obstetrics and Gynecology Journal, found that even among singleton pregnancies, there were higher rates, double the rates of prematurity, double the rates of perinatal mortality, and double the rates of birth defects. And that's among just the singleton pregnancies. Looking at the health of the mother, there's a higher risk in infertility for miscarriage, for preeclampsia, and other pregnancy complications during pregnancy. We believe NAPRO technology reduces these risks. Studies should be are ongoing that will help us look at that. And we... That's some of the data that we like to see developed in the next years. Long-term health issues. A lot of the underlying health conditions for infertility in women are related to diabetes and cardiovascular if they've had polycystic ovarian syndrome. Endometriosis are related to various other outcomes, including pelvic pain. Hormonal issues can be related to the future risk of reproductive cancers, including ovarian, endometrial, and breast cancer. All of these risks, we believe, should be reduced with NAPRO treatment. Makes good biologic sense with what we're doing to treat and ameliorate the underlying conditions. But again, these are long-term studies need to be done to prove this. On the male side, there are issues, I believe, just as well. This is an area that wide open to develop further research. And also on the children's side, people are doing some neurodevelopmental studies on children born through ART, finding some issues there. And we hope to be able to do that with NAPRO and show that the children are healthier that way as well. I just want to briefly touch on a couple of ethical dimensions. I think many of you are quite aware of these. But there's a fundamental different ethical viewpoint between NAPRO technology and ART. There's a partnership between the fertility care practitioner, the fertility care medical consultant, and the couple with NAPRO technology, whereas ART considers pregnancy a technological accomplishment of the physician or the lab. There's an acknowledgement inherently, at least, of God. However, whether or not the couple's religious, there's an acknowledgement of the natural order. And the goal is a healthy baby, the mother and father, whereas in ART, again, the goal is a baby quickly at almost any cost, monetarily, as well as whatever the health issues are. There's a profound respect for human life from its earliest stages of development on the NAPRO side and the restorative reproductive medicine side, whereas on the ART side, it's undeniable that embryonic stages of life are treated instrumentally as means to an end. So now, NAPRO technology is the key to current treatment and future research. I'm going to talk just a little bit about the IRM and the synergy we're trying to develop between research and practice. That's the whole reason for this organization, is to have a learning community together. This is a quote from primary care literature, but I would like to apply it to restorative reproductive medicine and NAPRO in particular. This happens to be a quote from someone who's my mentor in medical school. He wrote, and again, this is about primary care, but I think it applies equally to what we're doing with NAPRO and restorative reproductive medicine. Care delivery is undergoing constant changes, many of which constitute natural experiments from which we could learn important lessons. These care changes, however, usually come too quickly to allow the usual approach to development and funding of research proposal, and there are rarely research practice connections that coordinate the design and implementation of studies. In other words, we're all doing different things in practice, and we're all experimenting and finding different ways of doing things, either adding something, simplifying something, improving something. And most of the time, we share those rather informally. We'll hear about one of our greatest innovators next talk. Phil Boyle has been great in developing a lot of really valuable approaches. But these things are not, and we share them at meetings, but we do not usually systematically document outcomes. What happens if this practice is using Femara or letrozole instead of Clomid, or a different dose or a different dosing regimen or all these different things? We do not systematically evaluate those outcomes. We just do it anecdotally, just what we think when we do it. One of the things, the genius of the whole development of NAPRO technology, is that Dr. Hilgers basically did systematically evaluate his outcomes. This whole textbook is a systematic evaluation of his own outcomes and some others, but mostly from his own work. So it's that kind of systematic evaluation that will allow us to do better in the future and improve what we do. Again, this was applied to primary care, but it could apply equally well to restorative reproductive medicine. We must admit that we have quality problems that require unified attention and action. We are not doing things as well as we could. We should convert the paradigm from translate research into practice to optimize health and healthcare through research and quality improvement. And to do that, we need to develop and facilitate more partnerships among clinicians, researchers, and care delivery leaders for engaged scholarship in both research and quality improvement. And that, to my way of thinking, is really what we're trying to accomplish with the AARRM. So that, I want to say just a few words about the current study we're ramping up with the, it's been going on for some time. Many of you know this, but we're actually in a phase where we're accelerating and increasing our activity with it. And that's the International NAPRO Technology Evaluation Surveillance of Treatment, or INES study. How many of you are not familiar previously with INES study? Oh, okay. A few, all right. So the reasons for the INES study are to document outcomes for peer-reviewed medicine literature, to project likely outcomes for patients. In other words, be able to tell them, okay, if your age is 39 and you've been trying for 5 years and you have never previously been pregnant, then based on those factors, we can say your average probability of having a NAPRO baby, if you stick with the program, is X. That's what I mean by project likely outcomes. Improve NAPRO efficiency, quality, and outcomes. And the outcomes here are not just live birth, but healthy pregnancies, healthy babies, healthy children. So the INES design is a prospective cohort of couples who come to a NAPRO practice for trying to get pregnant or maintain a pregnancy, either infertility or miscarriage. Those couples will be followed for 3 years, regardless of whether they continue treatment or not, and will obtain treatment data from their NAPRO doctor, whatever NAPRO treatment they have. We've been working hard with this study to synergize the study procedures with the practice procedures so that those who participate with INES study have added value for the practice as well as for the research. In other words, it's not just something extra to do, but you get some help back that helps your practice. So what we have right now for that is an online clinical entrance questionnaire where the couple who's signing up for NAPRO treatment can be given a password, can do a full comprehensive questionnaire online that then, when they come for their first consultation, can be printed out or just copied and pasted from online into your electronic record. And that becomes saves you time in your evaluation. Gives this, it also gives standardized data we can use for the study if they agree to sign up for the study. The written informed consent of the couples is to follow them for 3 years with an option to follow them later if we were able to do that. And the initial questionnaire, again, facilitates that evaluation. We've received a few months ago some additional funding for this study that we're very excited about that will allow us to actually reimburse the couples for their follow-up questionnaires. They'll actually get some modest reimbursement for filling out some yearly follow-up questionnaires. Main outcomes of this study are live birth up to 3 years after beginning Nampro technology treatment, whether or not they continued with the treatment or not, and whether or not they did anything else, and examine this in terms of their baseline characteristics and their treatment choices. So I'm encouraging you to get involved. First of all, join the IRM. That's the website. You've got the, and you can talk to their people at the registration desk about joining the IRM. And to arrange to start with iNest, I can't promise you can all do it at once because we have to be able to work with you, but email me and we'll get you started as quickly as we can. Just to give you an idea to get started with iNest, you need to identify a responsible physician and staff who are going to track it. And it does take somebody who works on this on your end. And then figure out integrating the initial clinical questionnaire into your practice, completing the online research training, which is about 2 hours of training that's free, obtaining a local research ethics approval, and then phone conferences and a site visit with study coordinators, which includes myself and a couple of staff that are working on that. Christy's been involved here in the front. So you'll funding for iNest, I would like to acknowledge, has been given by a number of sources, and the most recent and largest funding has come from the Women's Reproductive Health Foundation. So to wrap up here, I'd like to encourage us all to think about infertility as a chronic health condition, not an acute health condition. It really changes how we think about it, what we do about it. Restorative reproductive medicine seeks to diagnose those underlying conditions. The Create Model Fertility Charting is a key component of that, the best approach we have for doing standardized biomarker tracking. Nampro technology has the healthiest outcomes for mothers and babies, and it's the key to current treatment and future research in restorative reproductive medicine.